We absolutely want to have impact globally. We absolutely want to amplify, much of what happens here, certainly in terms of those multidisciplinary strengths you were talking about at Stanford, on Stanford's campus. It's much more about offering up what we've learned at Stanford and learning from people on the ground in those regions and some of their academic leaders or other leaders. And that mutual sort of knowledge exchange mission or purpose in our global strategy really lends itself incredibly well to partnering.
You're listening to Beyond the Chart with Stanford cardiologist Dr. Raj Dash, powered by Clint, the clinical intelligence platform. Today, Raj is joined by Priya Singh, Executive Vice President, Chief Strategy Officer, and Senior Associate Dean at Stanford Medicine.
Hello, and welcome to the Beyond the Chart podcast, brought to you by Clint, the clinical intelligence company. The Beyond the Chart podcast is dedicated to bringing thought leaders in healthcare together to discuss and learn more about how health systems, patients, and the many stakeholders in the ecosystem benefit from partnerships with each other, from the use of real-world data, and from emphasizing health equity and also technology innovations that surround us today. I'm your host, Rajesh Dash, and I'm a preventive cardiologist at Stanford focused on digital health. I'm also the co-founder of Clint, the clinical intelligence company, and we've had quite a few executives from the life sciences and health systems around the country weigh in on the role of technology and data in clinical care and clinical research. But there's another important perspective that we haven't captured yet, and today is our opportunity. We haven't really tapped into the view of an executive in a large integrated delivery network and their perspective on some of these same pressing issues. So today we're incredibly fortunate to have Priya Singh join us on the podcast. Priya is the Executive Vice President, Senior Associate Dean, and Chief Strategy Officer at Stanford Medicine. And for the listeners today who may not know her entire background, the list of accomplishments is quite long, and just allow me a moment to highlight just a few things. Priya, you joined Stanford Medicine in 2013. You currently serve, as I mentioned, as an EVP, Chief Strategy Officer, and Senior Associate Dean. And in this role, you're overseeing enterprise strategy, leading strategic planning, global strategy, industry relations, and PR and communications for Stanford Healthcare. You're also in a similar role at Stanford Medicine Children's Health and School of Medicine. You've led our first integrated strategic plan, aligning our research, education, and clinical care missions for each of our three entities, and highlighting our revolutionary vision on precision health. Prior to joining Stanford Medicine, you were the assistant dean at the Stanford Graduate School of Business, and you were responsible for executive education and global innovation programs. And even before Stanford, you were at Oracle, at Respond.com, and Levi Strauss. So, an incredible array of experiences. And over that time, you've achieved tremendous recognition, recognized by Becker's Hospital Review, Fortune's Most Powerful Women, the Silicon Valley Business Journal's Women of Influence. And also, you've been a tremendous mentor to early career women in terms of their leadership growth in their careers. And so from all of these achievements, you really have an incredible reputation as someone who delivers on institutional global strategy and branded initiatives over the last 20 years. So we're really fortunate to have you today. Thank you so much for joining, and welcome.
Thank you, Raj. Thanks for having me.
I wanted to just get started with discussing Stanford Medicine. A lot of viewers may not realize this, but the School of Medicine at Stanford and the hospital and clinics at Stanford are legally separate entities. And somehow, I've learned in my 15 years as faculty that this somehow actually works, but it also means that there are two parallel org structures, and you've risen to a very influential position for all these entities within the organization of Stanford Medicine. Can you tell us a little bit more about how this role came to be, in terms of, you know, that the roles that you play with the organizations, and how it's helped you in terms of really just getting things done in a complex organization?
Yeah, thanks, Raj. I do want to say that was a very generous introduction. And also, I don't know about being an influential person as much as I know that along with my peers, with the leaders of Stanford Medicine, and with my team, for sure. It's very much a team effort in terms of driving some of these initiatives along, and certainly very much so in terms of being aligned. And just in terms of how this role came to be and you know, how sort of we view getting things done, I would say, you know, what started out was when I first came to Stanford Medicine, I was in a leadership role focused on the School of Medicine, on strategy and communications, which is really all media relations and, you know, proactive thought leadership. There's a lot in that internal and external communication space, and much much more importantly on some level, because communications stem from our strategic journey, really was this idea that we wanted to be unified in our strategic planning and in setting our strategic priorities. And look, you know, we started off building strategic frameworks and really looking at all communications as stemming from our strategic plan for the School of Medicine. And when David Entwistle and Paul King became CEOs of the adult health system and the children's health system, respectively, that sort of collaboration and partnership with the dean of the School of Medicine, who is now Dean Minor, is also VP for Medical Affairs, the three of them together really saw the value in moving from collaboration to really truly being aligned, and, you know, not just sort of sharing each other's journeys and each other's priorities, but sort of setting that direction together. And so for the team, it it was easy to follow their lead in that respect, and to really look at ways in which we could examine all of the strategic priorities across our mission areas and think about then how sort of we could map them out in a more aligned way, sort of finding ourselves eager to be rowing in the same direction.
Now, that's fascinating. And being able to sort of, you know, bring that different, maybe sometimes different schools of thought and different philosophies together is really something that sounds like it's a big part of what you do on a day-to-day basis. And you know, in your role with the titles that you have, you often will see clinicians in some of these roles, and yet you're not a physician. So I would argue that you have sort of this medical doctorate by osmosis with all the exposure you've had to all things healthcare at Stanford. And your background, though, is coming from a really interesting and perhaps complementary world of marketing, right? And so I want to ask you a little bit more about that, because when your first sort of marketing position was at Levi Strauss, obviously a very well-known, very large company, and then even a larger company at Oracle, you led a massive marketing budget for them, and you left those industry positions and took this education, executive education role in marketing at Stanford's GSB. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think that's correct. And then you then quickly rose to be an assistant dean in global innovation, supporting entrepreneurs in other countries. What attracted you to come into academia and to GSB in particular? And then I think if you can share some insight into why did you then move to the School of Medicine and Stanford Medicine?
Yeah, all great questions, Raj. And I love talking about this because I think it's, I hope that some of the lessons I've learned through my journey are ones that, you know, others can benefit from in some way. So the first part of your question was really about the fact that I'm not a physician. I'm not a scientist. And I've studied both in undergraduate college and then in graduate school, I studied business. And that too went to both college and grad school in India. So I never really actually went to school in the US. I was born and raised in Mumbai, or Bombay, as I still like to call it. But here's what I will say, and I'll talk about this a little bit and then go back to kind of the early part of the journey at Levi's and how I landed at Stanford. I would just say that, I was extremely pleasantly surprised, not entirely shocked, but somewhat surprised at how much the physician and scientist population, our faculty, our staff leaders who have experience in those fields, our physician leaders welcomed someone like me with a business background and with a bit of a global perspective. And they really quickly became great partners. And I thought, quite frankly, that I would have to work a little bit harder to win that trust and that partnership. But they really did come to the table with open minds and open arms almost in terms of welcoming a different set of lenses and expertise and experience. So that was wonderful. But it actually ties right in with another part of what I'm going to share, which is sort of the reason I came to Stanford in the first place. And so I did say I was pleasantly surprised, but not entirely surprised for the following reasons. Look, I will say my early career days at Levi Strauss, and I spent, you know, a good 9.5, almost 10 years there, were absolutely magical in many ways, particularly because you're talking, you know, about a young person early on in their career, having come from a different country all the way from India, you know, and India just seemed further away from the US, you know, 25-ish years ago. And it's an iconic company, an iconic brand, and certainly an iconic brand to market. And so to even just have that opportunity was a dream come true in many ways. But I learned a lot over those years, over that decade almost. I learned a lot, certainly about marketing, about brand, about teamwork, and, you know, many other things like that. But I learned something even more, which I didn't recognize until after I had actually left Levi Strauss, and that was learning about the fact that an organization's values mattered much more to me than actually my own career path. And Levi Strauss actually was, you know, ahead of its time back then and had absolutely impeccable values. I mean, just in the interest of time, I won't go into too many details, but they were just, I mean, whether it was about community, whether it was about their own employees, whether it was sort of the concept of work-life balance, long before some of these ways of thinking or even approaches were more common with companies. And so they were bold in some of the positions they took. And it wasn't until after I left Levi's that I recognized how much I missed those values. And I went on to Oracle and, you know, much larger scale in terms of the work, the company. And it was kind of an interesting shift for me. But, you know, I had been given advice from a lot of people that, you know, I was living in Silicon Valley and I ought to explore moving into, you know, tech marketing, right, versus being in the retail space. And I wouldn't say I regret it in any way at all, because there was a lot that I learned at Oracle, but the values were different, or quite frankly, at least in the portion of the company that I was involved with, they just weren't that apparent to me. And the kinds of values that Levi's had taught me and that I had learned from them over that period of time began to quickly become kind of the most important thing for me. And so it was less of a decision to come to academia and more a decision about what organizations in this area. I was a young working mother and I didn't want to move out of the Bay Area. And, you know, we were two working parents. And so I was limited to the Bay Area, which I loved anyway. But it made me think about how I could target organizations that had similar values. And in doing some of my homework, you know, Stanford stood out as a place with those values, with people who were mission driven and, you know, worked here because there was a shared purpose. And that's what attracted me to Stanford more broadly, certainly to the GSB. And I felt very fortunate when they hired me at the GSB in a marketing leadership role, just because, again, you know, here was this young person now with a good amount of experience under my belt at Levi Strauss and Oracle, but nevertheless, who, you know, had been to school in India, to want to hire me into a marketing role was, you know, just meant a lot to me. And again, spoke very much to the values of the people and the organization. And that sort of, you know, followed me when I came to medicine. I moved from a marketing role to a broader strategy role within the GSB. And that's what I think was appealing to Dean Minor when he was newly appointed Dean of Medicine and really wanted someone to join his team and mostly lead strategy and also oversee communications as a part of that portfolio. So much more I can say about kind of that journey. I'm speeding it up a little bit, but I'll pause there.
It's amazing. I mean, I didn't really think of it in that way, but the experiences you had at Levi Strauss and at Oracle, really interesting to hear how progressive some of those companies were in terms of some of the ways they were thinking about their brand, but also just kind of work-life balance and things that were way ahead of its time. And it really is, you know, Stanford has a brand and it's significant. And I think I've learned working with you over the years how important it is to be a good steward of that. And I think you have obviously been able to do that, and yet still you have a lot of strategic priorities for growth and partnership. And so is that maybe one of your most challenging things? Is how do you grow Stanford Medicine and its brand and yet still make sure that you are a good steward of that brand with the responsibilities that come with it? Is that a challenge for you that you deal with every day, or what do you think?
Well, let's say this. I think it could be a challenge if it wasn't for the fact. So it's let's just say, look, growth strategies are always somewhat of a challenge. They're also an opportunity, but one has to, certainly for me, I think about growth as, when you think about growth strategy, it has to be measured. It has to be it has to line up with the overarching mission and not so much be growth for the sake of growth, not so much let's grow and expand just to keep up with the competition, or in any industry or in any space, frankly. It ought to be targeted, measured, strategic growth, where you've been really thoughtful about how you want to grow, what areas you want to grow in, how does it benefit the overarching mission, et cetera. So in that sense, when you keep those sort of principles in mind, it's not difficult to think about what's right for your own growth. And in terms of being, you know, to your point about being stewards of the brand, we're very much, all of us in leadership roles and all of us who work at Stanford Medicine, you know this, are good stewards of the brand overall, but we're also extremely conscious of the fact that we're part of a bigger brand, which is Stanford University. And we have a role and a set of responsibilities to be good stewards of that brand as much as we are stewards of the Stanford Medicine brand. And for those reasons, look, as an academic medical center, and you know, Dean Minor talks about this a lot, our CEOs, David Entwistle and Paul King, talk about this a lot, they're very conscious and very purposeful about the fact that we do need to grow to some degree, but we want to grow in a way that allows us still very much to be a measured part of Stanford University and not so big that we take away from the other mission areas and other schools and other priorities that the university has in order to be a whole and complete academic institution in a way that Stanford, you know, aspires to be and continues to be. And so I think, you know, partnerships are a big factor here. And again, once we've thought about strategic and measured growth in the right ways, I think our leaders feel strongly that we can do much of that through partnerships, and we don't have to sort of expand our own footprint, whether that's, you know, right here on campus, which again, we don't want medicine to be so big that physically in terms of our footprint that there's, you know, that it's an unequal sort of relationship with other parts of the university. And so I think there's very limited growth on campus, but there are opportunities to grow a little bit as needed off campus. And there are certainly many, many opportunities. David really talks about this all the time, to partner, certainly in the clinical context, and even in other parts of our mission, to partner with others who are doing great work around the country, around the globe, or for that matter, right here in our backyard in the San Francisco Bay Area. And through those partnerships to really expand our opportunities for impact and to amplify all the work that, you know, all that happens here and the discoveries and, you know, amazing clinical care and much more.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, the balance with Stanford University and that partnership as well, right? In terms of, you know, one of the things that I appreciate a lot about the Stanford campus is just the physical layout is such that right across the street from the medical campus is the main campus with the biology and chemistry and engineering buildings. And I, you know, way back when I was an undergrad here, I appreciated being able to come over to the medical side. And now I know all these joint conferences and meetings with sort of basic science department faculty and engineering faculty is really rare. I think that's something that many campuses don't have. And what I hear from you though is that it's larger than that. It's the partnership and the equal footing of what their initiatives are and what ours are at Stanford Medicine being in balance. So I think that's really interesting. When you think about partnerships internationally, this is something that I know you have a deep interest in doing, but it sounds like that could become, that's even harder perhaps because those are different cultures in many ways and often different cultures, but also different philosophies. How do you find, you know, similarities or alignment there with other organizations?
Yeah, I think it's sort of an expansion of some of the same principles I was talking about. We do believe that the role we play in the global context is an important one for the same reasons I talked about before. We absolutely want to have impact globally. We absolutely want to amplify, you know, much of what happens here, certainly in terms of those multidisciplinary strengths you were talking about at Stanford, on Stanford's campus. We certainly want to amplify those globally as well. But far more importantly, I think we at Stanford Medicine are very conscious about the fact that this is not a one-way street globally. We're certainly not in the business of going and setting up sort of bricks and mortar, you know, buildings or hospitals or even running hospitals overseas or even a research enterprise or anything. Instead, it's much more about offering up what we've learned at Stanford and learning from people on the ground in those regions and some of their academic leaders or other leaders. And that mutual sort of knowledge exchange mission or purpose in our global strategy really lends itself incredibly well to partnering. And so we've established some smaller partnerships. We're certainly open to the idea of bigger, more meaningful ones. There are plenty of ongoing conversations that we're having right now. But again, all of these under the umbrella of, you know, what is the best way in which we can be globally present? After all, we're Stanford. We're in the heart of Silicon Valley. We have 7 amazing schools. We have a phenomenal health system and a ton of absolutely brilliant faculty. And how could we not want to share some of that knowledge globally? Of course we do. And by the way, you know, many of our faculty have their own global relationships. You know this well. Everything is sort of top down or centralized, but there certainly are more and more opportunities to think about global partnerships centrally, overarchingly for the brand and the institution, for Stanford Medicine, I mean. And we, you know, we continue to move towards those and be attracted to those because we want to come together with people who are experts on the ground and then develop something that's mutually beneficial.
That's fantastic. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I think the approach is refreshing. I like that. When you are thinking about sort of the roles that you've had, one of the things that, you know, Stanford has from a values perspective and a brand perspective is they're a leader in some of the technologies that are being developed. You know, whether it's, you know, precision medicine or precision health, there have been a lot of leadership, thought leadership from Stanford in that space. We now have this new kid on the block, which is a major player, which is generative AI. And we're starting to see how that is being marketed by some of the purveyors of that, like OpenAI and Microsoft. And they're really marketing Gen AI as a solution to all of our problems, including in healthcare. And I was alarmed a little bit at some of the things that they're saying at some of these conferences that I've attended. That being said, there probably is a significant role for it in many aspects of what we do. What's your take on this? Is it, are you excited, or and what concerns do you have about things like generative AI and other digital technologies for how you do your job? And is that something that you expect may filter down to patient care eventually?
Yeah, look, I'll start by saying I'm not an AI expert. You know, certainly in terms of even having deeper knowledge in the context of ethics or public policy or health policy, I should say, in how AI will impact all of us. I don't bring expertise to the table. My job is to convene others and help us kind of go on that journey together. But I will share my personal opinion. I think it's incredibly exciting. And look, I think, you know, we started a Dean Miner, along with the HAI initiative here at Stanford University, we've started an initiative called Raise Health, which is about responsible AI in health. And, you know, honestly, I think that if we approach AI with what the massive impact can be both for patients, but also for providers, frankly, and we embrace it, but all with this sort of overarching set of principles that allow us to think about equity and allow us to think about being inclusive and being responsible in how we put some of these solutions into place, I think we then can make more informed and better decisions. And part of, again, my role is to bring those experts together. And as we roll out, you know, at this stage, early pilots, at some stage, maybe more ongoing AI solutions, particularly in the clinical setting, I think it's a unique opportunity that we have with all of these experts who can opine and weigh in on where we're on strong footing in terms of knowing that we can bring equity into the picture as we provide some of these solutions, and where we can actually help in terms of physician wellness and other healthcare workers as well. I think we just need to move quickly but consciously, and make sure that we've taken some of those frameworks and principles and checked ourselves every step of the way, and be open to the fact that we might head in the wrong direction and have to rewind a little bit. But personally, I think there's a lot of opportunity here, both for patients as well as for providers.
I've known you for a long time, had that pleasure, and you've helped me in my career. So I'm very thankful for that at many times in my career. But I'm continuously amazed by your ability to connect. You connect ideas to people here at Stanford and elsewhere. You connect ideas to even countries and other governments, and ideas to other ideas. And you've created magic when you've done that. And I wondered what qualities and skills you think are needed to have success in your role. And I'll weave this in with another question, because I think that those qualities and skills you've brought up before in other interviews. I was reading some of the other interviews you've done in the past, and you've talked a lot about collaboration versus alignment, and how alignment is so important and yet is very hard to achieve. And I just kind of wanted to get your perspective on that. And if you have examples, I'd love to hear kind of how you've approached this and give us a glimpse into some of those skills that are so important in your role.
Yeah, I'll talk about the qualities and skills a little bit, and then touch on how I think that applies to this concept of alignment versus collaboration, which is one of my pet topics, because I do think there's a big difference between the two, at least in terms of how organizations can drive their strategies forward. All of us have a number of great qualities and then other skills that we need to develop. Very early on in my life, this sounds awfully simple, but they've sort of guided me throughout my life and career. I learned two things from my parents who were extremely different from each other in their styles and approaches and even interests, and certainly in terms of their biggest qualities and skills. So from my father, I learned how to stay and the value of being extremely organized. And somehow I think if you're an organized person, you tend to be someone who gets things done and can deliver on the biggest, boldest initiatives because you're organized. And you can, if there are going to be delays or things you can't accomplish, I think part of being organized allows you to acknowledge those hurdles or those setbacks, and with the aim of getting things done, getting as much done as you can possibly. And so that was something I watched my father do over the years as he led a company for, about 30 years. I mean, it was all the way in India, very different times, very different cultures, very different styles. But nevertheless, it was a principle that stayed with me. And my mother, on the other hand, who worked for a while in her life, quite unusual in those days in India, and then was a stay-at-home mom through most of my life, was a people person. And she was warm. And if I say so myself, I think I've inherited some of just her ability to engage with people because she enjoyed it and I enjoy it. And so it's not, this big skill or asset or, whatever. It's just that I enjoy talking to people. I enjoy connecting with them. I enjoy shaping things with other people versus on my own. And so I think, I got that from my mother. And I think the combination of the two, if you like connecting with people, you like developing ideas and delivering on ideas with people, and then you put those sort of organizational principles into practice around that, I think that combination is a strong one. And again, part of it is what I learned, and part of it I tried to consciously develop further. So I think, I think that's kind of the answer to the first part of your question. And then I think really just to go into the collaboration and alignment piece, it ties in a little bit with what I just said about connecting with people. Look, I think when you are collaborative, and whether this is a small team that's working on a project or a startup, or whether it's an early stage startup, or whether it's an established, much larger enterprise, or any sort of mission-driven initiative across sort of all of these organizations or projects or initiatives, I think people often in their hearts do want to be collaborative. And in my mind, that means they're very open to sharing information with colleagues, with other project teams, with others in general, internally, externally, whatever. But I think sharing information willingly and happily is fantastic for a team, but it's in my view, sort of one level of strategic strength is when you are collaborative and you have that willingness to share information. When you take that to the next level and you map out your path or your journey together, and now all of a sudden, because those milestones and those goals are ones that you've set together whenever and wherever it's possible, then you start all working together to get to those milestones and goals. And now you're all rowing in the same direction. And then in my view is where you're truly, you truly find yourself aligned. And that to me is the difference between collaboration and alignment is, one part of the journey is about sharing, but the other is actually planning out the whole journey together. And then I think, maybe this is maybe I'm being a little too dreamy here, but I think when you're aligned, when you're truly genuinely aligned, the sky's the limit in terms of what you can achieve, or at least what you can attempt to achieve. So I feel strongly about, you know, collaboration being wonderful and incredibly important, but alignment being in a whole different league, frankly.
I love that. And, you know, I think about all the faculty, just the faculty. I mean, there's so many other incredibly valuable people who contribute every day for what we do at Stanford. But like, we have a new chair of medicine, right? You and Ashley, who, in my opinion, one of the truly great minds of our time in terms of personalized genomics, digital health. He's an author as well. I mean, crazy talented. But yet we look around, we have a ton of faculty who are amazing, brilliant. I look up to them every day. And they all have their own agendas. They all have their own ambitions. They all have their own programs. What is it like to herd cats like that, to get them not just to collaborate, but to be aligned? And what's your biggest win, would you say, in having done that in your career here?
Yeah, look, I think it's important to pursue strategic alignment, even strategic collaboration, but certainly strategic alignment in a way that feels right for an organization. So you don't sort of pursue it by elbowing people too much in that direction or not understanding what the strengths of the organization are and where to be aligned and where maybe it's healthy not to be aligned or not even to be collaborative, but to be working in your respective spaces. And I think Stanford's been a wonderful sort of learning and growing experience strategically, Stanford Medicine, I should say, for me in this space, because look, our biggest strength at most academic institutions, but certainly at Stanford Medicine, is that we are organic. We have absolutely brilliant people here, and we certainly don't want to get in the way of what they're doing in their labs, in their clinics, in, you know, in their staff roles, or in their support functions, because our biggest strength is the fact that we leave people alone and we let them do what they do best. And I think what helps at Stanford Medicine then, as you said, herd those cats. I mean, it's a little bit of that, but it's not that difficult, actually. It ties back with something I said earlier about values and principles. Look, people want to get behind our mission and they're here for a purpose. And there is absolute 100% alignment in the organization in that context. And that greatly helps when you try to set up a strategy and get people to align around it. Because even if their particular initiative or their particular body of work doesn't show up in the organization strategy, they can see the links and the connections, and it's our job in being collaborative and taking us to that next level of alignment to point out those opportunities and to highlight those opportunities and to connect all of those dots, right? And you asked sort of what I feel has been a highlight or an achievement in that sense. some years ago, we launched the first ever in the history of Stanford Medicine integrated strategic plan. And this ties right in with collaboration and alignment and even herding cats to some degree, all of what you and I have been talking about. But we had never brought our mission areas and our entities, our hospitals and our School of Medicine, our research, education and patient care initiatives or clinical initiatives together in a more thoughtful, purposeful way. And we worked hard to make sure that we engaged the entire organization, even if it took us a little bit longer. We gave everybody an opportunity to hear the direction we were taking, to weigh in on the direction we were taking. And I think the launch of the integrated strategic plan, and by the way, we just did a refresh and we now have what we call the ISP 2030 in place. But it was not easy, but it gave everyone an opportunity to get behind that mission and purpose and to, you know, to really amplify the values that we all share. And that's really what makes it a lot easier for them to be persuaded to connect those dots or to get behind an integrated strategic plan. And, you know, I can say quite proudly, and it's, you know, who am I? I'm, you know, again, my role is to help facilitate some of this, but it's the great minds at Stanford Medicine and our amazing talent across all areas that really got behind the integrated strategic plan and really saw value in us being more aligned as we look at our future.
So that's fascinating because you had that alignment essentially across many different areas of Stanford. And then you had this very profound moment that we all had with COVID, right, in 2020. And I felt that compared to other institutions, we did a reasonably good, if not a very good job of being prepared and executing on a strategy. And you said something very interesting in a Scope article. Scope is a Stanford publication for those that don't know, but you said that basically these experiences will have a profound impact on our approach to leadership. And the pandemic gave us a glimpse of Stanford Medicine's full potential and how much more we can accomplish when we work together. We are much stronger as one than as a collection of stakeholders. How did having that plan in place help you? And did it help you? And how have you, the new version of the ISP, was it shaped in any way by experiences and learnings from that profound challenge that we had?
Oh, for sure, Raj. Absolutely. I mean, I would say that we had already come together in the journey around the ISP. And so coming together around a crisis, certainly one as huge and significant as the pandemic, became a lot easier, no question. But really, in addition to what we had learned through the integrated strategic plan and its process was really about how much we cared about each other's opinions, you know, in terms of all stakeholder groups across Stanford Medicine. And that really, it meant coming together and working to come up with solutions when we didn't really know what the optimal or perfect solutions were, right? I mean, there were so many unknowns, particularly in the early days of the pandemic, or then in terms of the vaccine rollout, just so many things we had to learn and start from scratch around. But we had learned to come together in a proactive sense in developing our strategic plan. And so coming together to I don't want to say to solve a crisis, but really to address the biggest issues that came out of the pandemic were certainly easier because we were more collaborative and because we were more aligned. And so there's no question. I mean, there were, you know, and of course, you know, a big factor, which has a little to do with the strategic plan and more about sort of leadership more broadly, was that we were very intentional about being physically present. You know, it was a time when a lot of people, certainly during the lockdowns, et cetera, a lot of leaders had the ability to be able to work from home, and nobody really at Stanford Medicine did in leadership roles. We were physically present because we had physicians and other many key leaders and workers in our health system who were very much on the front lines. And so, you know, I certainly didn't work from home for even a minute throughout even those early days of the pandemic. And so I think, you know, again, the fact that we had become closer as a team or as teams even across the institution as we worked on the strategic plan, as the School of Medicine had already sort of found a closeness with the health systems, this was greatly a great advantage, certainly in the early days and throughout the pandemic, no question.
That's a great story. Now, thanks for sharing that. I think, you know, I did see you and many of the other leaders at Stanford Medicine all around the hospital during those days, which was impressive. Scary days, but we came through all okay at Stanford. So, I mean, I think, you know, one thing that I've sensed, and I think our listeners and viewers are sensing, hearing you and hearing about your roles and leadership here, is that you're an amazing role model for a lot of young professionals who are coming up in healthcare or in marketing or in other aspects of healthcare that involve all these things. And the impact that you're having is incredible. When you were coming up through the ranks, was there someone or maybe more than one person who you looked up to who helped share your shaped your career and your ambitions that you think of all the time as far as a role model that you had?
Yeah, I would say I've had several role models, and one of the biggest learnings for me, sort of mid-career, I would say, was that, you know, a lot of people think about a single mentor, you know, someone that you rely on who almost becomes sort of a leadership coach for you, who's, you know, clearly further along and more successful in their career. And I think a lesson that I learned earlier, you know, before I got to a senior leadership role, was that it was actually quite an advantage to have several mentors. And I then at a certain point got to be quite intentional about selecting who they were. So I had someone who was my boss at the Graduate School of Business, who certainly was a mentor and continues to be a mentor to me. At some stage, they've now kind of moved on to a different stage in their life and career. And so in a sense, they're kind of a great thought partner, even though they were a mentor in my mid-career days. And then there were others who were even peers who in some ways mentored me. We mentored each other. And then others who were from different industries and in a different place in their lives. The more closely you work with them, the more beneficial coaching can be, because if it's a once a month kind of conversation, it becomes a little bit more distant and theoretical. But if they're engaged in some of what you struggle with or some of your big wins on an ongoing basis, then I think those kinds of relationships can also be incredibly helpful. But again, the biggest overarching sort of learning for me was that people somehow feel a little bit like traditionally you've had one, maybe two mentors, but not like a group of mentors. And I think you can learn a lot from different people who have different strengths and are at different stages in their lives and careers.
That's great advice. I think for a lot of young women and men looking for career diversity and their options, you've moved across different spaces almost fluidly and done incredibly well. Any other advice that you would give to some of our up-and-coming trainees and people in the industry for what led you to the success you've had?
Yeah, you know, there's one thing that I like to talk about a little bit, because it's something I learned almost not purposefully, but sort of just by bouncing around a little bit in terms of my own journey. And that is that, you know, as you move up in your career, or further along, I should say, that's actually a better way to frame it, I think it's important not to think of your career or your journey as a ladder where sort of growing or expanding your experience and your skills is really about sort of going one step further up on the ladder. I think it's important to think about the ladder going in many directions and not just going upwards, because yes, it's wonderful to get, and look, don't get me wrong, I don't think people should shy away from having the right kind of conversation about your compensation or your title or the teams that you manage. But growth comes in many forms and flavors almost. And I think, you know, sometimes you don't have to get to that next level of compensation or title, and you can grow by really working with your peers or taking on kind of a new, slightly hairy, messy, or bold initiative, or engaging in advising a smaller early stage company. And you don't always have to be, you know, and I say this again, not to suggest that people shouldn't go for that next title or next, level of funding or compensation. But I do think that it's just as important to feel fulfilled in other ways and to explore all directions that the ladder can take you in. And it's more fun that way, I think.
No, that's incredible advice. And I think that the diversity of choices you've made have reflected that. You haven't made your career decisions based off of just financial reasons or title. It's been about experiences. It's been about philosophy and values. And I think that that has translated into so many accomplishments that you've had here at Stanford Medicine. I really enjoyed this. We could talk for about 100 more things I can think about to talk about, but with our time running short now, I just wanted to thank you for joining us today and the time you spent with us and the insights you've shared. Looking forward to everything that you bring to Stanford Medicine and beyond in the years to come. Anything else that you'd like to say before we end today?
No, just a huge thanks to you. Always delightful to have a conversation with you, Raj, and you bring a lot to Stanford Medicine as well as do many of your other and my other colleagues as well. So it's very much a journey with members of the broader team, and so grateful for the opportunities and for everyone. Thank you.
Thanks, Priya. You've all been listening and watching the Beyond the Chart podcast. I'm Raj Dash, your host, and our guest was Priya Singh today. Thank you. You can find us online, and look forward to seeing you in future podcasts. Thank you.